flown. I have sailed. I have moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge.
Blue sky smiling at me, nothing but blue skies do I see. Bluebirds singing their song, nothing but bluebirds all day long. I never saw the sun shining so bright, never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by, when you're in love, my, how they fly. Blue days, all of them gone, nothing but blue skies from now on. Hey! Never saw the sun shining so bright, never saw things going so right. Noticing the days hurrying by, when you're in love, my, how they fly. Oh, blue days, all of them gone, nothing but blue skies.
This is Bruce Kaplan, welcoming you back to another episode of Radio Masterpieces. Tonight, boy, do we have two wonderful mysteries for you. We begin with a wonderful episode of The Whistler called Seattle Take 3. I think you'll really enjoy it. And then we have Dick Powell in a fantastic adventure of Richard Diamond, Private Eye. Our wonderful engineer at this station is Kevin Crutchfield. He's made available now. If you go on the web after you listen to these programs, if you want to listen to them again, just go to Google, type in Radio Masterpieces, and then click on the link and you'll be able to listen to many of our programs again. Thank you, Kevin Crutchfield, for doing such a magnificent job of editing my program in making it so our listeners can listen to the shows again. Just have a wonderful weekend, and now let's enjoy the two great mysteries.
And now, Whistler's strange story. Seattle, Take 3.
It was a pleasant sensation Ted Cordray was experiencing, staring down at the big pile of money on the bedcover, his eyes lingering over the hundreds of small bills a moment before he would shove them into this half-packed suitcase. Yes, a pleasant sensation, because the job was done, and soon Ted would be on his way out of Los Angeles without a worry in the world. Probably forever. A strange contrast. All that money, and the shabby hotel room that Ted Cordray had been forced to take until his departure. But that sort of thing could be over forever, too, Ted was thinking. And then, quickly, Ted shoved the money under some clothing in his suitcase, snapped the case shut, and crossed slowly to the door.
Come on, Ted, open up. I know you're in there. Andy? Yeah, it's me, Teddy boy. Surprised? No, not to see an old friend. What do you want, Andy? Well?
Why don't you close the door, Teddy boy?
Trapped.
And somebody might be passing by.
Yeah, so what's that to me?
Okay, I'll close it for you. Got anything to drink around?
No, this is kind of a temporary setup, Andy. You see, I... What's the laugh for? What's so funny, anyway?
You're funny. Trying to play so innocent around little Andy. It won't work, Teddy boy. I know what's cooking.
And what is cooking?
About 30 G's. They're hot enough to cook anyone.
Oh?
Still not going to drop it, huh? Okay. It's money Gus Stillman collected from the $2 bookies and gave you to distribute to the boys. Only they didn't know he gave it to you, and poor old Gus got himself run over by a car. So, Teddy Boy and, me, his good friend Andy, we got ourselves some dough, huh?
A shakedown, huh? It's not like you, Andy, not like you at all.
I'm getting tired, Ted, real tired. I won't even argue if it ain't half. Give me a third, and I'll be on my way.
You think you will? For how long, Andy?
Now, Teddy Boy, I said I'm tired. I won't chase after you.
No, I know you won't.
That's a boy.
Because you won't know where to chase. The only thing you won't do is tell the boys, because that cuts you out entirely. And because you know what they'd do if they found out you'd waited until after I left town to tell them.
No. Now look, Ted,
No, you look, Andy. Right this way. I got a cleaner shot at your jaw. It won't hurt so much. And Andy.
Yeah, yeah.
You said you're tired. This will give you some rest.
One blow does it, doesn't it, Ted? Andy sinks slowly, passes out on the floor of your hotel room. There's only one worry. He'll be covering every bus and railroad station in town in an hour or so. You tie him up securely, put a handkerchief over his mouth. Decide this will keep him quiet long enough for you to catch a plane. You grab your suitcase, step out of the room, and lock the door. Downstairs, you pay your bill, step into a phone booth, and call the airline.
Central Airlines, reservations.
I want passage for one, please. The next plane to San Francisco.
Yes, sir. We can accommodate you. That will be flight 6, 11 tonight.
11? Well, that's 3 hours. Haven't you anything else?
Sorry, sir. If you'd called earlier...
Yeah, I'll skip it. I'll try another line.
You don't like to stay too long on the phone, do you, Ted? Not with Andy unconscious just upstairs. But you take time to call 2 more airlines. With the same results. No space or a later departure. You're wondering what to do when you hear an odd tapping on the glass door of the phone booth. You turn, almost freeze to the spot at the sight of a girl who's staring in at you, smiling amusedly.
Oh, hello, Betty.
Hello, Ted. Get your party?
No, they're calling me back.
You never call me anymore.
Oh, now look.
Please, Ted. I wish we could talk things over. I made a mistake. It's you I want.
Great. Tell that to your husband.
Please, Ted. Let me talk to you.
I'm in a hurry. I got things to do. I got to look. Hey, how'd you know I was staying here?
All right, I'll admit it. I followed you. Saw you on the street the other day and followed you. The little puppy dog.
Uh-huh. You sure that's it? You weren't talking to Andy?
Andy Clark? I haven't seen him for months. Come on. Talk to a guy, will you? I might scare up enough for a drink.
Look, I have to make this one call. It's important. Then I want to get out of this place. It gives me the creeps.
I'll wait for you.
Okay. Only wait around the corner. There's a little bar there. It's kind of nice. I'll be right over, Betty.
Sure?
Sure.
Funny. I believe you. Make it fast, huh?
Yeah, 10 minutes. I'll be sitting right here reading the paper until this phone rings.
You pick up a paper, Ted. Make it look good as Betty smiles and walks toward the hotel exit. You're about to leave when your eyes fasten on something in the paper you're holding. A little item in the classified section.
Driving Seattle Monday a.m. Can take 3. Share expenses. Call Midland 9789. Mr. Beans.
There it is, Ted, your answer. You circle it with a pencil. It's your way out of town no matter who might be watching. Andy or any of the boys he referred to. They'd never expect you to travel this way. It's so simple, Ted, as Andy can check every depot in town.
9, 7, 8, 9.
Hello?
Mr. Bemis?
Bill Bemis, that's right. What can I do for you?
Well, my name is Cordray. I saw your ad in this morning's paper.
Oh, yes, Mr. Cordray. Like to make the trip with me? Nice, comfortable car.
Yeah, how many are you taking?
Well, now, to be perfectly honest, I expected of people myself, no one, just no one's phoned me yet. First time I ever tried this sort of thing. Thought I'd save something, but...
Look, Bemis, I like it better that way.
Oh?
Yeah, I'll go the whole thing, whatever it costs.
How soon can we get away?
Oh, well, sir, you take me by surprise. Let me see now. No use starting right out. Night driving's bad, you know. How about 5:30 in the morning? I'll pick you up.
Never mind. I'll meet you. Where are you staying?
Why, it's no trouble.
Where are you, I said?
The Midtown Hotel.
The Midtown. Good enough. I'll be there 5:30.
Very good, Mr. Cordray.
The Midtown, Ted, at 5:30, and you'll be on your way out of town. You wish you could share the luxury of Mr. Bemis' address tonight, but you can't. You've got to hide out, Ted, from Andy and anyone else who might be interested. And, of course, from your old girlfriend, Betty. You can't risk seeing her. A motel on the outskirts of the city solves the problem, doesn't it? And the next morning, promptly at 5:30, you're waiting in the chill air outside the Midtown as a big car pulls up near the curb.
Hello there! You looking for Buell Bemis?
Yes, Mr. Bemis.
That's right. Here, I'll put your bag in bag.
If you don't mind, I'll take it.
Oh, yes, it's the selfish, Cordray. Get right in. What's your first name?
Ted.
From now on, I'll make it Ted. Save time. You call me Buell, huh?
All right. Buell. Let's go, huh?
We're on our way. How do you like this boat? Beach walking, huh? Yes, sir.
Yeah, it's a nice car. What route are we taking, Mr. Bemis?
Make it Buell, please. I think 101 is best. More divided height.
Well, I think there's a quicker way to get on 101 if you'll turn up this...
Oh, forgot to tell you. I'm saving you money. Yes, sir. A nice little couple are joining. Call shortly after you.
Well, look, I told you.
Now, I know, very decent of you two, but since they called and the car's so big, so roomy, anyway, picking them up in Glendale.
Well, that's kind of out of the way.
Now, don't worry, I'll get us there, Ted. I know a shortcut. Been using it for years, yeah. Like the fella says, you can't teach an old dog new tricks.
Yeah.
You aren't pleased, are you, Ted? But there's little you can do about the young couple Buell Bemis is picking up, or about Buell Bemis himself. You hadn't bargained on such a constant conversations. And in Glendale, waiting outside a little duplex as Bemis goes inside after the couple, you're tempted to start the big car and run off with it. You decide against it. The men have cause to regret the decision. The couple with Bemis, Ted. You've never seen the man, but the girl, it's Betty, is getting right into the car with
you. Oh, Mr. Cordray, meet Mr. and Mrs. Wilson. Bob and Betty, huh? And this is Ted, folks.
How do you do?
Hi.
Ted, that's a nice name. I knew a Ted once. Ever mention him to you, darling?
No, I don't think you did.
But I should have. Oh, I think this is going to be fun. Mr. Cordray, Ted. How did you happen to find out about Mr. Bemis?
Make that Buell, if I dare.
I ran across his ad in the newspaper.
Really? Isn't that funny? I just happened to pick up a newspaper, too. Outside a phone booth. Mr. Bemis.
Buell.
Buell's ad had been circled.
Somebody who didn't call, huh?
I suppose.
Too bad. There's so much room here. More the merrier. Well, all set, folks?
I'm fine. Bob?
I'm all right.
Good. And you, Ted? All set and all acquainted, huh? I think it saves conversation.
Yeah, let's save a little right now, Buell. Get this thing rolling.
Huh? Oh, a kidder. That's good. This trip will be dandy. Real peachy dandy. And folks?
Yes?
We're off. Off to see the wizard! Yeah, that little ad of mine was a good idea. A very, very good idea.
Yeah, just great.
It was a shock, wasn't it, Ted? Your perfect plan for slipping out of town backfired. Yes, when your former girlfriend, now Betty Wilson, stepped into the car in which you thought you'd be driving alone with Mr. Buell Venus. You realize now what a fool you were to leave your newspaper with the ad circled in it. You should have known Betty would have come back looking for you when you didn't keep your date with her. And you begin to realize you were stupid to have used your real name with Venus. Slipped out before you thought about it. But those mistakes are behind you now, Ted. And Betty's sitting only a few feet from you in the big car, listening along with you and her husband to the rambling, ceaseless talk supplied by the driver and owner, Mr. Buell Venus.
But you'll see, nice little valleys, beautiful hills, even see the ocean every now and then.
You suppose we'll see a coffee shop, Buell? I could stand some.
Oh, no, just the spot. Just stay. That's where I was swinging back over there, picked up 101.
Yeah.
You were Glendale folks, took me a little out of the way.
Sorry.
No, no, perfectly all right. Worried Ted here, though.
Really?
You skip it. Let's not wait till Castaic, Bemis. The joint up ahead's fine.
Ooh, all right. But don't get sore. Don't get sore.
He does stop, doesn't he, Ted? After you'd almost given up hope. Betty excuses herself while her husband, Bemis, and you enter the coffee shop. Later, after your coffee, when Bemis returns to the car, you manage a few moments alone with her as she waits for her husband to return from a drugstore a half a block away.
Surprised, weren't you?
Frankly, yes. How'd you know I'd be in that car?
Because you're a heel.
I mean, specifically, how did you know?
Specifically, you're a heel. That's why I came back into the hotel and listened outside the phone booth. It was like paper.
You heard every word.
Practically. The newspaper told me the rest.
So where do we go from here?
Seattle, I believe the ad said.
Your husband, does he jump whenever you give the order?
Sometimes. This was one. He isn't too well. Out of work. I said there was a job for me in Seattle. Nightclub. Wouldn't let me go alone, that's all.
It's pretty slick. And when there's no job?
There'll be no Betty either. She's going with Ted. Isn't that right?
Yeah, I guess so. All right, I've got no objections. Have you given any thought to what we'll use for money?
No. Do you?
I'm broke, then.
You always manage.
Satisfied to take that kind of a chance, huh?
With you? Yes.
Okay. You seem to be calling the plays. There's your husband getting out of the car. Come on. Let's get started.
You're not too worried, are you, Ted? With Betty's husband along, watching her, worrying about her, you'll be able to get away, perhaps in San Francisco. Meanwhile, you can keep her assured that everything's all right. But back in the car and on the road, everything doesn't go all right. Betty's husband, you happen to turn around just in time to see him pitch forward slightly, clutching at his stomach.
What is it?
I don't know. My stomach is sharp.
Probably those donuts back there. I told you we should have waited till we got the cattle here, because the spots there.
Yeah, but he's in bad shape.
This happened before. He isn't well. Mr. Pitt, you got to find him a doctor.
You heard him. Find a doctor. Turn around. Somebody back there can tell us what to go.
Well, all right. Whatever you say.
Sometime later, you're sitting in the waiting room of a small hospital just off the main highway. Bemis nervously pacing the floor, stopping occasionally to glance at the wall clock over your head.
Oh, dear, dear, dear. Wonder how much longer we'll be here.
What's your hurry?
Well, it'll be getting dark before too long, and I just don't like to drive at night, my boy.
All right, so we can stop over somewhere along the road.
Oh, Mrs. Wilson, how is he?
Doctor says Bob is too sick to go on.
Oh, that is a shame.
Yeah, that's too bad, Betty.
Yes. Isn't it?
Well, that's that, I suppose. You'll be staying here, of course.
Of course, Mr. Bemis.
In that case, we might as well be on our way, Buell.
Oh, yes, yes. Sorry it had to turn out this way, Mrs. Wilson. Betty, certainly enjoyed your company, didn't we, my boy?
Yeah, I really hate to say goodbye, Betty.
But we must have. We've got a lot of road ahead of us, a lot of road. Goodbye, my dear.
Goodbye, Mr. Bemis.
Come along, my boy.
Ted.
Yeah.
You're really going?
I got business up north. Can't wait.
I can't leave, Bob. Not now, not like this.
That's right. You can't leave.
Coming, Ted.
Hey, you're coming. So long, sweetheart. See you around.
Back in the car, speeding north, you lean back in your seat, pleased with the way things have turned out. Yes, you're rid of Betty now, aren't you, Ted? Once and for all, you're certain of that. And it's a big load off your mind. Finally, with the coming of darkness, Bemis drives into a motel. After a few drinks at the bar and dinner, you retire to the privacy of your own room. Open your suitcase.
Where's it? The money. Where's it? It's gone. The money's gone. Betty, when we stopped for coffee, she went back to the car. That's where... She took it. Bemis! Bemis, open up!
What is the matter?
Get your stuff, Bemis. We're leaving.
Leaving? I was just about to...
Get your stuff. We're going back.
Well, see here, my boy. What are you talking about? Going back where?
To the hospital where we left the Wilsons. The
hospital? Oh, that's miles back.
What? Why? Never mind the questions. Get dressed.
Oh, see here, Ted. I don't think I care to drive all the way back there. Not at this time of night.
This gun says we're going back.
Oh, no. My boy, don't get excited. I'll do whatever you say. Only put that gun away. Now, please.
Get moving.
Dr. Bell,
gentlemen, $3 pardon me, miss.
Yes, sir.
You have a patient here, Mr. Wilson. Came in this afternoon.
Mr. Wilson? Oh, yes. You're a friend of his?
Yeah. I was wondering if Mrs. Wilson...
I'm sorry, sir. Mr. Wilson died on the operating table 2 hours ago.
He died?
Yes.
I see. Is Mrs. Wilson still here?
No, she left some time ago with Dr. Mason. I believe he was going to drive her to the bus stop.
The bus stop?
Down at the end of the street. She said something about going back to Los Angeles to informality.
Thanks.
It's almost 1 o'clock in the morning before you catch sight of the southbound bus, parked off the highway in front of an all-night cafe. As you order Bemis to stop the car, you glance inside the cafe and see Betty sitting at the counter. You're not too late, Ted. And this time, you're really glad to see Betty.
Okay, Bemis. Thanks for everything.
You mean I can go now?
Yeah, that's right. I won't need you anymore. Go on, get lost.
Yes, honey. Nobody ever puts anything over on Charlie Sims. Been in the business too long for that. What did you say your name was, honey?
I didn't say.
Oh, that's right, you didn't. Well, as I was saying, a guy on the road like me gets to know all the angles. See, all the
Excuse
angles...
Excuse me, please.
Ted. Ted.
Oh, Betty. Hope I'm not intruding.
Why, no, of course not. Mr. Cordray, this is Mr. Sims.
How do you do?
Right.
As a matter of fact, Mr. Sims here was just about to get back on the bus.
Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. Yes, sirree. Here, and have my chair, young fella.
Thanks.
See you folks later, huh? You got my check, sweetheart?
Bus line, Casanova?
He's been pestering me ever since I got on the bus. Won't let me out of his sight.
Uh-huh. Too bad about your husband, wasn't it?
How did you know?
I went back to the hospital.
Oh. Why did you, Ted?
Well, I got to thinking it over. About you.
You came back? Because of me?
You know darn well I did. What did you think I'd do?
Ted, what's the matter? Believe me, I didn't expect you to come back
for me. Oh, that's good, baby, because you're not what I came back for.
Ted, then what?
I'll give you a big clue. You got something that appeals to me very much. My money.
Money? Oh, no, Ted.
How come you didn't leave your suitcase on the bus?
I wanted to freshen up a little while we were waiting.
Yeah, I'll bet. Come on, baby. You and I are going to take a little walk. There's a nice little country road right across the highway. It won't take long. It'll be all over before you know it.
You were right, weren't you, Ted? It was all over before Betty Wilson knew. You killed her without a sound. Quickly opened her purse. The money wasn't there. You discard it. Then pick up her traveling bag you're certain contains the $30,000 that was stolen from your suitcase. And hurry back toward the highway. Once there, you decide it's safer to forego the bus and thumb a ride. This time, you don't want any complications, do you, Ted? No Betty,
No Mr. Bemis. No one but you. You wait until the bus leaves. Then as you start walking rapidly down the highway, a voice calls on you to halt. It's the sheriff, isn't it, Ted? You wonder what could have gone wrong. How he could have spotted you so quickly. Especially how he could know your name. But once in his office, it doesn't take you long to find out.
Look, Cordray, we know you killed her. We've got witnesses. Charlie Sims, one of the passengers on the bus.
That's what he says. He probably did it himself. She told me he'd been annoying her.
That won't do, Cordray. Sims followed you and the girl from the cafe down the road. He saw you killed her. Heard back and phoned me. If I hadn't lived close by, you'd have gotten away.
Oh, why would I kill her? She was just an old friend I bumped into.
That's what we want to know. Why? We know you killed her, but we don't know why. Name your suitcase and tell us. Get that phone, will you, Slade, while I go through the girl's suitcase?
Right, there. Sheriff's office. Slade speaking.
It beats me, Cordray. Nothing here but clothes. Makeup.
What?
That's right.
Well, it can't be. There's 30,000.
Are you sure? Oh, so that's why you killed her. Money, huh?
Okay, I'll tell him.
What was it, Slade?
That guy got himself killed in a car crash. Guy we're on the lookout for, named Bemis. Wanted by the L.A. police.
Bemis? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he was running a pretty slick racket. Advertising in the newspapers for passengers. People to share cost of motor trips, and then he'd rob them. Sure made himself a haul on this trip. Had over 30 grand in his pockets when they found him.
The band, my, wasn't the music grand? Chowder parties down by the seashore every 4th of July. Test your memory, my dearie. Do you recall when Henry Ford couldn't even fix a running board under a Chandler 6?
Dearie, life was cheery in the good old days gone by.
Do you remember?
Uh-huh.
If you remember.
Wonderful.
Well, dearie, you're much older than I.
What? Hey, wait a minute, honey. I just got a long memory, that's all.
Dearie, do you remember when we
stayed up all night to get Pittsburgh on a crystal set?
Keystone movies, Coogan and Chaplin, made you laugh and then cry.
Test your memory, my dearie. Do you recall when Orville Wright flew at Kitty Hawk? But take it from me, I would rather walk.
Dearie, life was cheery in the good old days gone by.
Do you remember?
Uh-huh.
If you remember.
Well?
Well, dearie, you're much older than I.
I'll kill you.
Holly Lauder's act.
My, wasn't the palace packed.
Jenny Lind, presented by Barnum, sang her sweet lullaby.
Test your memory, my dearie. Chicago all in flames, sure caused a terrific row.
They blamed it on Mrs. O'Leary's cow.
Dearie, life was cheery in the good old days gone by.
If you remember, then you're a whole lot older than, quite a bit older than, you're older than I.
Remember to take the journey on Sunday nights at 10 p.m. to midnight with Musical Star Streams, hosted by Forrest. Each week brings a new two-hour episode of Exotic Electronica. It follows Radio Masterpieces, which airs at 9 p.m. on Valley 104.9, your community station. And thanks for listening to Valley 104.9.
Shopping for my girl Helen Asher the other day. You know, stuff for dinner. This town's gotten hotter than a blast furnace in Death Valley, so you gotta pick out things that make for a cool meal. Like salads, cold cuts, beer. Real picnic style. Well, I figured I could whip up a fancy tossed salad or something. Until I got around to the tomato counter. Have you glommed onto the price of tomatoes lately? Now, what's with that? So the cost of living is inflated. So a T-bone makes like it just arrived direct from the Sultan's classiest cow. Okay, a T-bone, I can understand. But what's with a tomato? When it costs so much, it should be hanging from a charm bracelet instead of lying in a salad bowl. Who needs it? So I bowed from the waist and figured you could still do a lot of things with a plain head of lettuce. Oh, I got another beef, too. Why can't people start their killings in December when it's cool? Now, about a week ago, I got mixed up in a case, and before it was over, I took so many salt tablets, I am now the best seasoned private detective in New York. It started last Tuesday morning about 11 o'clock in an apartment on the Upper East Side. Ginny?
Yeah, genius.
No cracks.
No cracks. We're both waiting for old Gibson to turn us into the cops, and you say no cracks. This whole rotten mess is your fault.
Well, how did I know the old goat wouldn't fall for it?
Well, he didn't, so we better start packing.
What for?
Because I don't want to play hostess to a lot of little men in blue. I'm allergic to handcuffs.
Relax, will you? They won't find us.
They can trace me from the other apartment.
How? Gibson don't know your real name. Do you leave anything in the other place or we'll lead him here?
No. Cleaned out everything except the clothes. I didn't have time to move them.
I noticed you got away with the mink.
What do you want me to do? Leave it behind?
No. We can hock it.
Hock it?
Yeah. You want to blow town? Takes cash. Cash I ain't got.
You're telling me.
Look, baby, if Gibson does go to the police, I'll have to hock the court so we can blow this joint, see?
All right. You go get rid of it, and I'll start throwing some things into the suitcase.
Who's that?
How would I know? Maybe it's a landlady.
Oh, I forgot. The paint in this floor today.
Yeah, I saw the paint is in 206. They'll probably start in this room in a couple of hours.
Okay. Duck that court. I don't want the landlady to spot it.
Yeah,
but... Gibson.
So you really are married, huh?
Who is it, Harv?
Hello, Virginia.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes, I waited around in front of the other apartment and followed you here. I wanted to be sure to send the police to the right place.
Look, Mr. Gibson, look.
You look, whatever your real name is. I don't like being blackmailed or threatened.
But please...
No, Virginia, my mind's made up. In a way, I'm sorry for you, but you didn't think about me. I'm past 60, and I'm tired of being made a fool.
Look, why don't you give her a break, Mr. Gibson? Now, I'm not asking for
That's
me.
That's very noble of you. You should have thought about that a few hours ago when you accused me of making love to your wife. You're not really married. There is no need of displaying your indignation. There'll be plenty of time for that when the police arrive.
Harv?
Yeah. Come in here.
Hey, how dare you? Take your hands off me.
Look, you ain't calling nobody. You gonna listen to me?
You take your hands off me!
What are you gonna do, Harv?
I'm gonna change this old goat's mind about calling the cops.
You can't threaten me!
No!
Oh, you struck me!
How'd you guess?
Harv, take it easy. He's an old man.
Your concern is misplaced, my dear. I can take care of myself.
What? Why, you... Give me that can.
I'll be glad to give it to you across your shoulders.
Give me that.
Harv, be careful.
Hit me with a can, will you?
No, young...
I'll set you up for good.
Harvey! Harvey! Idiot.
Huh?
You big, stupid idiot. Look what you've done.
All right, so what? No better next time. Throw some water on him. Well, do you hear me? Throw some water on him. What's wrong? Come on, Gibson. Come on. Holy cow.
Listen.
Yeah.
Shut up.
I've got to get him out of here.
Why'd you have to hit him with a cane? Now you're in trouble.
I'm in trouble.
We're in trouble, baby. We. Stop that crying all over the place. Help me get him out of here.
How are we going to do it? It's broad daylight.
Yeah. Can't get him out of the building like this. We'll have to wait till the night.
We can't leave him in here.
Why not?
The painters.
What do you mean? What?
They'll be here in a little while.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Now what, genius?
Shut up, will you? I've got to think.
Diamond Detective Agency, murders financed while you wait.
Oh, you idiot.
Oh, is this Toodles Asher, the belle of Park Avenue?
Ah, this is Helen Asher, the girl that goes steady with the Diamond Detective Agency.
Ah, sounds like a fine organization. Are they reliable?
Very seldom.
Oh.
I'll tell you better as soon as I find out what I'm going to do tonight.
You're going to give your butler the evening off, and the Diamond Detective Agency is going to march through your front door single file and show you a shortcut to spend the bottle.
What time does all this begin?
How long will it take you to pucker?
About 2 seconds.
Well, I won't get there until 8. Don't hold it or you'll end up looking like a Yubangi.
You're terrible.
Yeah, but I'm pretty.
So is a baboon.
Oh, what you saying?
You won't be late, will you, Rick?
I don't know, after that last crack, I think I'd better start going steady with King Kong.
Rick.
No, I'm mad.
Ricky, I love you.
Only because I can hang by my tail and my fangs have that toothpaste smile.
I think you're the most wonderful man in the world.
Well?
I think you're the handsomest, the strongest, the smartest.
Well, all right. Now tell me something I don't already know.
Rick.
Bye, baby. See you at 8.
Bye.
A, I'm adorable. B, I'm so beautiful. C, I'm... Now, look, honey, I can't make it till 8 o'clock. I got a fan dancer who's a client. She wants to go out and trap an ostrich this afternoon.
Is this the Diamond Detective Agency?
Huh? Oh, yeah.
Is this Mr. Diamond?
Yeah, what's the matter? You sound like you're standing on a body.
Oh, Mr. Diamond, please, you've got to help me. I just don't know what to do.
Now, take it easy. Who is this? What's wrong?
I thought it moved.
What moved?
The man sitting in my chair.
Well, that happens now and then. Why shouldn't he?
Oh, well, because he's dead.
What?
Yes. I came home this afternoon from girls' camp, and when I unlocked my door and went in, I found this, corpse sitting on my Heppelwhite.
On your what?
Heppelwhite. I don't know how he could have gotten there.
Heppelwhite?
No, the dead man.
What about Heppelwhite?
Who?
The guy this corpse was sitting on.
Oh, no. That's a chair. Heppelwhite's an old antique chair.
Oh.
Now I'm so confused.
Well, move over, honey. Now take it easy and give me one thing at a time. Who's the dead guy?
Well, I don't know. I never saw him before in my life.
Okay. Now, why haven't you called the police?
Well, I thought about that, but I'm a school teacher, Mr. Diamond, and I was afraid of the scandal. I read a lot of detective stories, and the first thing that came to my mind was calling a private eye.
Private eye.
Mm-hmm. You had the biggest ad in the phone book, so naturally...
Naturally. Well, give me your name and address, and I'll be right over.
Oh, Esther Blodgett, 419 East 79th Street, apartment 108.
Okay, Esther. Now, don't let anyone in and don't touch anything.
Oh, I know that, silly. After the initial shock wore off, I found myself in complete control.
What's the matter?
I'm so nervous. I just lit a cigarette. It tasted so good, I offered one to the dead man.
Well, if he takes it, remember how you did it. I'll be right over. Heppelwhite. Oh, is Walt going to have fun with this?
Homicide, Sergeant Otis.
Hello, Otis. Let me talk to the lieutenant.
Diamond?
No, this is Black Beauty. I just did a mile in 112, and I want to report that I'd been doped.
Very funny.
I thought so. I didn't win the race, but I was the happiest horse on the track. Now, put the lieutenant on the phone.
Lieutenant Levinson.
Diamond, Walt.
I don't want any. You take your killings to another precinct.
Oh, now, don't be a sorehead. Giving you business is just my way of showing my friendship.
Can't we just be buddies at a distance? I'm getting tired of chasing corpses.
Well, grit your teeth and get over to 419 East 79th Street, apartment 108.
Homicide?
Yeah. A dame named Esther Blodgett reported it. She lives there.
Who's dead?
Well, I don't know. Oh, yeah. A guy named Heppelwhite.
Heppelwhite?
You ask Esther about it. She'll put you straight.
Are you coming over?
Yeah. Bye. As I went out of my office, I thought about Esther Blodgett and wondered how mad she would be when the police turned up. I had to call them whether she wanted a scandal or not, because homicide comes first in my book. I'm an ex-cop, and I still follow the rules. It's not a conscience. I just like staying in business. So when someone turns up with a killing, I always let Lieutenant Walt Levinson know about it. I grabbed a cab, and 20 minutes later, I was standing in Esther's apartment along with Walt, the dead man, and Heppelwhite.
Oh, you're a swell fella, you are.
What's the matter, Walt?
I've been going through that Heppelwhite routine for the last 10 minutes. I just found out it was a chair, that one right over there, the one that stiffs in.
Mr. Diamond, why did you call the police?
I thought you'd ask that.
Because that man's been murdered, Miss Blodgett. That's what good citizens do when they find a dead man in the apartment.
But the scandal? I'm a school teacher. What will my students' mommies and daddies think?
Honey, just confuse them with that Heppelwhite routine. What did you find out, Walt?
Not much. The coroner will be here in a few minutes.
Looks like someone gave him a pretty good beating. What's that all over his clothes?
Isn't that blood, Mr. Diamond?
Yeah, he's been bleeding all right. I mean that brown stuff, Walt. Looks like lint or something.
I noticed that, too. I don't know what it is. We'll have the lab analyze it.
Tell me, Esther, you said when you came in you unlocked the door.
Yes, that's right.
Are you sure it was locked?
Why, yes, it has a catch lock. Besides, you have to turn the key and then use the other hand to turn the knob.
Did you touch anything? Open any windows?
I touched nothing.
Well, there's a good one, Walt.
Yeah, a corpse sitting in a room with the door and all the windows locked. Do you always lock the windows when you go out, Miss Blodgett?
Well, I've been away for several weeks at a girls' camp.
Aren't you a little old for that sort of thing?
Oh, I've been counseling one of the teachers who goes along to take care of the young girls.
What do you think, Rick?
Well, he wasn't killed in this apartment.
No, no signs of a struggle.
There's only blood around the chair and on the body. He must have been carried in.
There would be blood trails on the floor.
Not if he was carried in something. You say you never saw this man before, Esther.
Never in my life.
Any identification in his wallet?
Yeah, name's Gibson. Leland Gibson. No money taken either, so that eliminates the robbery angle.
Any address?
Yeah, he's got an old driver's license. 12 East 64th Street. Pretty classy district.
Judging by his clothes, he was well fixed. Tailored? Good store?
As soon as the coroner arrives, I'm going to check this apartment building. Maybe somebody heard something or saw something.
Walt, let me check the 64th Street address for you.
This is a police job. Why do you want to check it?
Oh, because poor Miss Blodgett looks so unhappy.
I am, Mr. Diamond. I am very unhappy.
See, Walt?
So she's unhappy. If you want to check the place on your own, go ahead, but I'm sending some men over anyway.
Mr. Diamond, I like you.
Well, thank you, Esther.
No.
I want to hire you to catch the killer and free me from this awful policeman.
Awful policeman? Do you know how I got this way, Miss Blodgett?
Oh, I'm sure it wasn't easy.
Good for you, Esther.
I got this way because of this private detective.
Just call me Blue Eye.
Ever since he stopped working with me and left the force, I've gotten mixed up in more screwy cases than an alcoholic in a whiskey truck. There isn't one week that he doesn't turn up with one or two killings.
My, he gets excited, doesn't he, Mr. Diamond?
And in his spare time, he intimidates my sergeant.
Just call me Rick, dear.
I've taken enough bicarbonate in the last year to stop Vesuvius erupting. And if he doesn't give me a little peace and quiet, I'm going to end up solving a killing of my own.
Rick, my, that's a nice name.
How did you ever get to be a school teacher? You don't look the type.
Are you listening to me?
What makes me so different?
I've seen signs on highways that say it better than I can.
What are you two babbling about?
You mean the ones that say, danger, stop, look, and listen?
Well, that fits, but I was thinking about curves and soft shoulders.
Oh, no. Now you listen to me, Diamond. This is serious business. A man's been killed in soft shoulders. Miss Blodgett's apartment. If you want to take her on as a client, go ahead. But any questions from here on in will have to be gotten down at police headquarters.
You are taking me in, Captain?
Lieutenant. Yes, you'll have to come down for questioning.
Rick?
You go along with the big bad policeman, dear. I'll have you out in no time.
Well, all right, if you say so, but this has never happened to me before.
Oh, that's unfair.
Walt,
stop blubbering. Yes,
Walt.
What is it? Oh, you get out of here.
Oh.
Otis, where the devil is Otis?
I left Walt jumping up and down in front of Esther and the corpse and headed for 12 East 64th Street. It was an old brownstone in one of the wealthier districts. And when I rang the doorbell, I got another surprise.
Yes?
Yes. Don't tell me you're a school teacher.
I beg your pardon.
You forget it. It's the landmarks that threw me.
What do you want?
Do you know a Mr. Leland Gibson?
Yes, he's my father. Now, just who are you?
Name's Diamond. I'm afraid I've got some bad news for you, Miss Gibson.
It's Father. Something's happened to Father.
May I come in?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry, yes. Now, please, what is it? What's happened to Dad?
Well, he's dead.
Oh, no. No.
Look, I know this is tough, but you've got to help me. The police will be here in a minute.
The police?
Yes, your father was murdered.
Oh, I knew something like this would happen.
You did? Well, tell me about it.
Well, I don't mean that I expected Dad to be...
Okay, now, just take your time. Cry it out.
I'm sorry. Have you a handkerchief?
Sure, here.
Thank you.
Now, think you can talk about it?
Dad left the house about 3 weeks ago and moved into a hotel.
Did you have a fight or something?
Oh, no, no. Everything was fine, but...
No, no, hang on.
Things couldn't have been better, and he was in wonderful spirits when he left.
No arguments, no hard feelings? He didn't leave mad?
Oh, no, no, nothing like that.
Then, have you got any idea why he suddenly packed and moved into a hotel?
Well, I'm not sure, but I think it was a woman.
A woman?
Yes, he told me one day that he'd met someone he liked very much. The day after that, he moved to the hotel, but I never saw her, and he never said anything more about her.
Weren't you a little worried?
Naturally. Father isn't a young man, and he... I mean, wasn't.
Just one more question. What hotel did he move to?
It was the Adams on Madison Avenue. He used to go there 3 nights a week for dinner and a game of bridge before he decided to move in.
Well, thank you. Are you all alone?
Yes.
Got any friends you can call?
A few, I guess.
Well, call them. It's better not to be alone. And bawl your head off. It'll do some good.
I'll send you your handkerchief, Mr...
Diamond. Richard Diamond. It's in the book. For some reason, I've got a talent for leaving people emotionally disturbed. Walt hops around like a rabbit in a cabbage patch, and Otis always tears his hair out by the hands full. Miss Gibson was less active about it. She just tried to smile and shed enough grief to fill a tub. I grabbed another cab and headed for the Adams Hotel.
Yes, sir. Do you wish to register?
No, but I want to find out about someone who did 3 weeks ago.
Oh?
Yeah, oh. Mr. Leland Gibson.
Why, yes, he's staying at the hotel.
From now on, that's past tense.
I don't understand. He hasn't notified us that he's leaving.
Well, that might be a little difficult. If you'll run down to the morgue, I think you'll find out you're stuck with an empty room.
The morgue?
Yeah. Mr. Gibson has taken over one of the slabs, rent-free.
Oh, my goodness. What happened?
He's kind of dead. When did you last see him?
Early this morning. He left the hotel around 10.
Know where he was going?
Why, no.
Do you remember him having any visitors in the last 3 weeks? A girl, I mean.
No. Are you looking for a girl?
Yeah. Mr. Gibson's daughter seems to think he was running around with a woman since he moved into the hotel.
Oh.
You say that like you knew what I was talking about.
It was common gossip around the hotel.
What was?
Well, Mr. Gibson has been coming to the hotel for many years. He used to eat dinner here 3 nights a week and then play bridge with some of the hotel regulars. Now, about a month ago, we took on a new waitress.
Uh-huh.
Now, it was very obvious that Mr. Gibson was quite taken by her. So much so that he moved into the hotel and ate at her table every night.
Oh, what was her name?
Virginia Pelgrim. Quite good-looking. About 5'3", dark brunette, very well,
I'd like to see her.
That's impossible. She left the hotel about a week after Mr. Gibson arrived.
Oh, swell. Wasn't Mr. Gibson unhappy?
Oh, no. He was rather happy, in fact. I believe he wanted her to move so he could see her more often.
Now, what makes you say that?
Some of the things she said in the kitchen to the other girls.
Do you know where she might have moved?
No. But, you might check with the flower shop. Mr. Gibson used to send flowers every day.
Well, thank you. Well, I wasn't sure just where I was going, but Virginia Pelgrim was my best lead, and maybe she could tie the Gibson murder up with a silk ribbon. I talked to the flower clerk, and he gave me the address that the flowers had been sent to every day. It was a nice apartment in the village, and the landlady stuck her nose out like she was trying to smell me instead of see who was calling.
Yes?
I hope that door doesn't slam shut sometime. You'll have a bloody nose for weeks.
What do you want?
Roll out an eye with that nose, and I'll show you my badge.
Aren't you cops ever polite to anyone?
Well, there's a face that goes with it. I'm looking for a girl, about 5'3", dark brunette.
No, no, in the wrong place.
Her name's Pelgrim.
Oh, hush. She lives upstairs.
She does, huh? Is she in now?
No. Went out this morning. Hasn't come back.
And she probably won't. She have many visitors?
Only a couple. Men.
That figures. Ever see an elderly man, gray hair, about 60?
Sure, every day.
Know his name?
No.
You said she had a couple of visitors. Who else?
Another man. Younger. Kind of greasy. Only came around a few times. Old man was there this morning, had an argument.
Could you hear what they said?
I don't, nope.
Anyone else?
No.
Who paid her rent?
She did, cash.
Mind if I take a look at her apartment?
Got a search warrant?
No.
Then you can't.
Okay, thanks. You've been charming. I left the old bat and headed back to the schoolteacher's apartment. If I was right, I'd seen setups like this before. But there was still the problem of finding out how Gibson was killed and how he got into a locked room. When I pulled up, I saw the wagon, complete with corpse and coroner, pulling away for the morgue. And when I went in and knocked on the door, I was certain that they'd forgotten one of the bodies.
Oh, it's you, Shamus.
Why, Otis. They're leaving without you.
Who is?
The hearse. Shouldn't you be lying down or something?
Now you stop that, Rick, and get in here.
Hello, Walt. What's new?
Well, Rick.
Well, Esther. Has Otis been using his rubber hose on you?
Oh, no, no, but I was getting lonesome. I'm glad you got back so soon.
You are.
As soon as you two stop rolling your eyes, maybe you can tell me what you found out, Mr. Diamond.
Yeah. Walt, send Otis down to the station for a search warrant. Then tell him to get over to 9 West 12th Street and see what he can find in the Miss Virginia Pelgrim's apartment.
Who's Virginia Pelgrim?
The only person who was mixed up with a murdered man. There was another man who used to see her, but I can't find out who he was.
All right. Otis, go get the warrant.
Yeah, Lieutenant. Thanks, Diamond.
A pleasure, Sergeant. What did you find out, Walt?
There were 11 people in the building at the time of the killing. None of them ever saw the guy before. Here's a list of the names. 3 people on this floor, 5 on the second, and 3 more on the third.
Have you talked to the landlady?
Certainly. She doesn't know any more about it than the rest.
What about that funny brown lint on the dead man's clothes?
We're checking on that right now. The lab said they'd call me.
Did the landlady say she had a key to this apartment?
Sure, but she hasn't used it but once since Miss Blodgett was away at girls' camp.
When did she use it?
3 days ago, when she had let the painters in. And she says that the windows and door were definitely locked, because after she aired the paint smell out, she locked them herself.
Painter, huh?
Yes, and I've been looking. You know, I think they did a terrible job. Why, the kitchen
Esther.
Alone... Yes, Rick?
Later, dear.
Yes, Rick.
Walt, did they paint the whole building?
They finished the second floor today. Oh, I'll get it, Miss Blodgett. Probably the lab.
Rick, yeah? Do you know who did it?
Yeah. I got a hunch.
Oh.
I see.
You're wonderful.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
Lab, Walt?
Yeah. That lint you spotted on the dead man's clothes is from the mat that they put under rugs.
Mm-hmm. Walt, you were on all the floors. Did one of the apartments have a rug missing?
They're all missing from the second floor. The tenants took them down to the basement when the painters moved in.
Any off this floor or the third?
No, just the second.
Well, your killers are on the second floor, Walt.
How do you figure?
Well, let's look at what we've got. Dead body in a locked room. Blood on body and floor around body, but nowhere else in the room. Carried in a rug, bullseye.
Oh, this is so exciting.
Esther.
Sorry.
Yeah, but how does a dame called Pelgrim figure into it? There's no Pelgrim listed in this building.
Well, there shouldn't be if I'm right. The dead man met Virginia Pelgrim while she was working as a waitress in his hotel. She gave him a pitch and he fell. He put her up in an apartment so he could see her more often.
So what?
I think she was working with another man. A man who was seen around her apartment by the landlady.
Then how did the body get over here?
The guy the dame was working with probably lives here.
What about the motive?
Well, my guess is that Gibson was being blackmailed, and he followed the girl here. He was probably going to yell cops, so they killed him.
Okay, now what about the locked room? Explain that.
I let the landlady of this building explain it, Walt. Go ask her one question. Who had this apartment before Miss Blodgett?
Esther.
Oh, I'm sorry, Esther.
Well, I can tell you that. A Mr. and Mrs. Austin, they moved to a smaller apartment and let me have this one. It's more rent and they couldn't afford it, I expect. This is a better apartment, though. It has very...
Esther. What apartment did they take?
Oh, it's on the next floor. Apartment 209.
According to this list of people who were on the second floor at the time of the killing, the Austins are the only couple. What did Mrs. Austin look like, Walt?
Oh, about 5'3", dark brunette, very, very well...
Oh, say no more. Come on, Walt.
May I come?
No, Esther. You stay here. I'll be back later and discuss the better features of your nice little apartment.
Yeah? I want to talk to you again, Mr. Austin.
Why? Told you everything I know.
Where's your wife?
In the back.
We're coming in.
Okay, you don't have to shove.
Who is it, Har?
Them cops again.
Well, hello, Virginia.
Do I know you?
Where's your rug, Mr. Austin?
What? It's down the basement.
Miss Pelgrim, how long have you been married to this man?
About 3... Hey, how'd you know
me? Shut up.
Know your name? You might as well tell the lieutenant everything. Why did you lie about knowing Mr. Gibson?
I didn't. I never saw him before in my life.
I didn't tell you the dead man's name was Gibson. How'd you know that?
Don't answer that.
Oh, shut up. You and your husband killed Mr. Gibson and carted him downstairs in a rug.
Why'd we do that?
Because the painters were on their way to paint your apartment. You had to get him out without being seen. You dumped him in Miss Blodgett's apartment because you knew she was out of town. And you used to live there, so you still had a key.
Harvey.
You shut up.
We've got enough to hold both of you on. The rug will have bloodstains on it.
Oh.
Get out of my way. Get out, Walt.
Why, Walt, you're so rough.
Yeah.
I didn't kill him. Harvey did. I didn't kill him.
Okay, okay. You can tell me all about it down at the station. Hey, where are you going?
Well, it's 6:30. I got a date.
What about Miss Blodgett? She's going to get lonesome again.
Ah, she was born that way. I've got to see a girl who's going to hold a pretty interesting class of her own. Bye.
Maggie is my girl, and her folks, they had us in the world. When we went out, each night we always found they were following us all around. There was her father, her mother, her sister, and her brother. Oh, I never saw Maggie alone. I turned my mind inside out just to try to figure out how I could somehow get Maggie alone. I got the measles, rushed to her house. She was alone, and when her folks got home, there was a sign hanging there saying, quarantine, beware. Now I always see Maggie alone. There was her father, her mother, her sister, and her brother. Oh, her family we just couldn't lose. And so without hesitation, I made a reservation for taking a long ocean cruise. The day the boat sailed, we stood on shore. I wasn't sore. The tickets that I bought were for her father and mother, her sister and her brother. Now I always see Maggie alone. There was her father, her mother, her sister and her brother. Oh, we knew we must do something soon. Then finally we had our say on the day we stowed away on a rocket ship bound for the moon. When we got up there, I looked below. I was no dope, 'cause through my telescope I saw her father, her mother, her sister, and her brother. And I knew I had Maggie. Yes, I knew I had Maggie. Now I'll always have Maggie alone.
Moved about this world of ours, and ever in search of the finest of its kind, we bring you the tops in Spine Chillers.
You are listening to Radio Masterpieces on Valley 104.9, serving Duval, Carnation, and Redmond Ridge. The door is slowly closing for Radio Masterpieces, but be sure and tune in again next week from 9 to 10 p.m. to listen to more wonderful mysteries from the 1940s and 50s. This is Bruce Kaplan signing off. Radio Masterpieces is a Seattle Miracle Incorporated production.